A series of earthquakes beneath a popular ski resort, followed by the announcement from government scientists that a volcanic eruption may be imminent. Thousands of lives could be in jeopardy in the scenic mountain community. Sound like a Hollywood film? Actually, it's a scenario that partially played out in the 1980s. Find out about the Long Valley Caldera and Mammoth Lakes, California. It's all new and all blue. Join us. You're listening to Blue Dot. I'm Dave Schloem on North State Public Radio. Our guests this week are David Hill and Margaret Mangan of the United States Geological Survey. Dr. David Hill oversaw the Long Valley Caldera Volcano Observatory, which is now part of the California Volcano Observatory, overseen by Dr. Mangan. We begin with Dr. Hill. Dave Hill is a scientist emeritus with the United States Geological Survey in Menlo Park, California. He served as chief of the seismology branch from 1978 to 82. He was scientist in charge of the Long Valley Observatory from 82 to April of 2009. Along with Stephen McNutt, Drs. Hill and Mangan are the authors of a recent paper titled Volcanic Unrest and Hazard Communication in Long Valley Volcanic Region, California. Dave Hill, welcome. I found this article to be extremely interesting to read because I'm very familiar with this region, its natural and human history. But for a listener who may not be familiar with this place, let's start with the basics. Give us the geographic setting for where the caldera is. And it's really in one of the most beautiful landscapes in all of California, isn't it?
It really is. It's just east of Yosemite National Park. And it's at the north end of Owens Valley, which is a fault-bound valley with the steep escarpments of the Sierra Nevada on the west and the Inyo White Mountains on the east. So it's really quite spectacular.
And just my recollection is the mountains there just tower above the valley. It's just amazing compared to here, like in the Sacramento Valley.
That's right. The Sierra Nevada are kind of a block-tilted range, and the steep side is on the east side. That's the side that's been downfaulted as the Owens Valley has subsided over the last 4 million years or so. So the really impressive topography is because of those range front normal faults that have, of course, been produced by recurring earthquakes over thousands of years.
Well, for our listeners, if you've never driven down Highway 395 from Reno to Los Angeles, I highly recommend that.
I support that.
One of the most beautiful drives in all of California, or all of the United States, I think.
I agree.
Let's talk about the geologic history of the Long Valley Caldera. It was 760,000 years ago. Tell us about what happened then.
Well, the area has had volcanism going on there for really a couple million years, but by far the biggest event, most impressive event, was formation of the caldera 760,000 years ago with a massive eruption of the Bishop Tuff. 600 cubic kilometers of rhyolitic magma came out and left this depression. It's an oval-shaped depression, 30 kilometers by about 15 kilometers in diameter, and that was the main event. But volcanism has continued there right up into the recent past, with some small eruptions in Mono Lake to the north just a few hundred years ago.
Let's that eruption in 760,000 years ago, give us an idea of like the depth of the ash deposits nearby from that.
Well, they're certainly tens of meters thick right in the vicinity of the caldera, but because the ash is blown into the stratosphere, it's blown downwind, so their thicknesses of a measurable thickness of ash as far as Nebraska they got distributed downwind as the eruption continued and the eruption cloud finally dispersed.
And would it be fair to characterize it as a kind of a almost mini Yellowstone type of eruption?
Very similar. Slightly smaller, 600 cubic kilometers. Yellowstone was maybe twice that big.
but much bigger than something like Mount St. Helens.
Oh, yes. Orders of magnitude bigger. Yeah, this would be repeat of something like this, or Yellowstone would be a global event. It would have an impact around the globe, particularly because of the particles sent up into the stratosphere, reflecting sunlight back, cooling. Yeah, it would be a major event.
Let's talk about 1980 and 1978, right in the early 80s. What happened at the caldera that caused such concern amongst USGS scientists? And when did, you know, the real monitoring of it start?
Well, the first thing that happened in was in 1978 was a magnitude 5.8 earthquake about 15 kilometers southeast of the caldera. That was followed by a series of magnitude 3s and 4s that kind of migrated northward toward the caldera. Then on May 25th, just a week and a day after the Mount St. Helens eruption, three magnitude 6 earthquakes occurred just along the south margin of the caldera and in the immediate vicinity along in the Sierra Nevada to the south. That was followed 2 days later by another magnitude 6. So there were four magnitude 6s in that time period. The pause between those two, and because of the characteristic of earthquakes in this part of the Sierra, the USGS released a notice of the potential for additional magnitude 6 earthquakes just hours before the fourth one. So we were pretty happy about this successful prediction.
And what did that indicate might be going on in the caldera?
Well, then it produced quite a persistent series of aftershocks that really has continued basically up to the present time, including 4s and 5s, lots of felt earthquakes in the Sierra Nevada block to the south and in the southern part of the caldera, extending eastward from almost the east margin of Mammoth Lakes all the way across to the to Lake Crowley on the east side of the caldera. Activity really continued, producing lots of earthquakes. A lot of these earthquakes had the character of so-called spasmodic bursts, which are characteristic of volcanic activity. But our attention was still, at that point, really still focused on Mount St. Helens. That's where the most recent impressive activity happened. And we thought that these earthquakes were associated with rangefront faults on the Sierra Nevada rather than anything to do with volcanism.
And what started to really point towards, you know, the possibility of volcanic activity?
That summer, the summer of 1980, Jim Savage and Malcolm Clark did a releveling of Highway 395 that spanned across the caldera, looking for the offset on the rangefront faults. But what they found instead was a dome-shaped uplift of the central part of the caldera, the resurgent dome of the caldera. That was a key indicator that magmatic processes were involved more than rangefront tectonism. That was the key.
And of course, you know, Mammoth Lakes and the Mammoth Mountain Ski Resort are right there on the edge of the caldera. Tell us about how local business and political leaders initially reacted to the hazard threats. My recollection is geologists weren't super welcome in the area in the 1980s.
They weren't, and that reaction didn't really take place until May of 1982. Those of us in the Geological Survey and Alan Ryle at the University of Nevada were concerned about the possibility of magmatic activity associated with this. And we had a number of meetings. And in early May, we had a meeting that resulted in sending a memo to the chief geologist of the USGS recommending that we release a formal notice of potential volcanic activity. Actually, we recommended a watch of potential volcanic activity. At the time, the USGS had a three-level warning system, notice, watch, and warning. We recommended the middle of those. That went back to Washington, D.C., the headquarters of USGS in Reston, Virginia, the protocol at the time was for communication to go from the federal government to the state, to the counties, to the cities, and so on. A very top-down kind of communication. While that was going on, a reporter from the L.A. Times got wind of it and published it in the paper. And on 2 days before the Memorial Day weekend, a big summer day weekend, that story showed up in the local version of the L.A. Times paper. That's how the local officials and the local population found out about our concern of volcanism in the area. And that, of course, is not the right way for that thing that to happen.
I was reading about something called the 1,000-year lunch, and I believe that was in 1983, and it involved a resident of Mammoth Lakes that had been critical of the USGS in letters. And it turned out he wasn't just some local crank. Can you tell us that story real short?
Yeah, the 1,000-year lunch was arranged by the chairman of the Chamber of Commerce to try to get better communication between the business community and the scientific community. And John Filson, who was then chief of the Office of Earthquakes, Volcanoes, and Engineering, came out from Reston to accompany me to that meeting. John recalls it as the 1,000-year lunch. There were two of us, and then the rest of the people around were all business leaders and from the real estate community, really giving us a bad time. And one of the people there was a person named William Graham, who had some very good points to make. But yeah, that was John's view of that was right. It was a 1,000-year lunch.
Why did he call it that?
Because it lasted a long time, and it seemed like it lasted much longer than it really did because we were in the hot seat for so much of the time. That's why I called it that.
What was the most important thing you learned while working as the director of the Long Valley Caldera Observatory?
Many, many things, in fact. One of them is that doing the very best science possible is really critical. If we base our hazard warnings and discussions on weak science, we're really in trouble, not only intellectually, but from people, other scientists trying to get second guess and people getting different messages from other scientific quarters. So having the best science is really critical. The other thing that turned out to be really useful that we didn't recognize at the time was continuity of the scientific presence there. I was a scientist in charge for the Long Valley Caldera for quite a long time before turning it over to Maggie in 2009, I guess. And we went through a number of county board of supervisors changes, a number of local administrative changes. So the continuity we had really carried over to the local population and the local authorities.
And are geologists more welcome there now?
I think so. In fact, you know, in a way, as I look at it, people may have too much faith in what we say now. And I'm a little bit concerned if things pick up again, they will rely too much on what we say and not be quite aware of the uncertainties we still have to deal with, even though we've learned a bundle about the processes going on there. There are still lots of uncertainties, and there always will be, of course, dealing with anything in the earth, which is a very complicated place.
Well, Dr. Dave Hill, thank you for your time.
Delighted.
You're listening to Blue Dot on North State Public Radio. I'm Dave Shlom. When we come back, we'll find out about the current state of geologic activity at the Long Valley Caldera with Margaret Mangan. She's the director of the USGS California Volcano Observatory. Stay with us. We'll be right back. And we're back on Blue Dot talking about the Long Valley Caldera, located just east of Yosemite National Park here in California. Our guest is Margaret Mangan. She's the director of the United States Geological Survey's California Volcano Observatory. Maggie, when you first took on this job with overseeing Long Valley under the umbrella of the observatory, what was the relationship with Mammoth Lakes and the USGS really in a lot better place than back in the 80s?
Dave Hill paved the way for smooth sailing, I have to say, with respect to our standing in the community in Mono and Inyo County. His decades of heartfelt dedication to providing the best possible science, the best possible forecasting to the community, and taking the time to talk to everybody down there time and time again, really paid off. I would say, though, I did have the benefit of things having quieted down when I took over the helm of the observatory. The rocky times with the earthquake activity and strong uplift settled down starting in about the year 2000. And fortunately, that low level has continued with a few hiccups since then.
Let's talk about some of the specific hazards in the region. For example, I've been to Mammoth Lakes and I've seen the tree kill area, which is very dramatic. So tell us about what's going on there with carbon dioxide killing the trees.
Okay, well, I'll start out with a little tutorial about volcano hazards in general. There are many things that can happen during a volcanic eruption, but there are also things that can happen before and after. The CO2 that you talk about is leaking out of the ground because magma has risen to about 2 kilometers. Let's see, that would be about a little over a mile below the surface. Under the area of Horseshoe Lake in Mono County. And at that level, the gas kind of burps out of the magma. So the CO2 is gradually leaking out of the magma buried in the roots of that volcanic area and emanating up through cracks and eventually through the soil and out to the atmosphere.
And how does that kill the trees?
Well, CO2 in high concentrations is not good for many things, including humans. But what it does to the forest is it essentially poisons the root structure of many of the types of vegetation, including the forests.
And it's also, you know, like you said, it's a hazard to humans because, you know, the CO2 is much more dense than air. So you don't want to sit around, you know, having a picnic lunch in that dead tree area.
No, I wouldn't suggest that, especially in the winter time when the snow is holding that CO2 down at the ground levels. During the summer months, it's quite all right to be in the area, and it's a very interesting area and a wonderful trailhead to some of the John Muir trails in Mono County and Inyo National Forest. And the reason it's okay in the summer is because the winds are wafting those emanations and diluting them such that the hazard to humans is low.
Let's talk about the resurgent dome, the uplifting part. When they were checking out Highway 395, they noticed that back in the 80s. What can you tell us about the technology that you're using now compared to then?
Well, technology has changed and changed rapidly, especially in the last decade. So instead of using leveling devices that includes the kind of things you might have seen back in the 80s on our roadways with stadia rods and electric distance measuring devices. We use now GPS receivers. So we have an array of 20-some GPS receivers that are around and about in the Mono County area, in the Long Valley caldera. And those GPS receivers are like the things that we have on our phones or in our cars, except for they're highly sensitive. And they can measure ground deformation, ground movement, or inflation in volcanic areas to the level of centimeters and even millimeters of change. And that information comes in 24/7 to the USGS California Volcano Observatory, where scientists, there's about 50 of us here in Menlo Park that are involved in volcanic studies and volcano monitoring, where we interpret that data and provide the information that our stakeholders, the civil authorities, the public, government officials, those types that need information to keep people safe and out of harm's way.
And if any of our listeners are movie aficionados or a little old enough to remember the film Nevada Smith with Steve McQueen, one of the climactic scenes was shot there in Hot Creek.
Was it really? Well, I guess yes. I'm not old enough, and that sounds awesome.
Yes, so if you get a chance, watch that, because you'll see Hot Creek and exactly that area.
Yeah, well, we do monitor that area and provide the information to the public and to the Forest Service. And our monitoring is basically one of temperature, hot spring temperature, and hot spring chemistry. Those give us indications of whether the system is in a mode of gradually becoming more robust or more energetic. And, of course, monitoring earthquakes in that area also give us some information on how those hot springs and gas emanations may behave.
And earthquakes are what started this whole story out in 78 and 80 and have continued to this day. What kind of seismic net do you have covering this area?
Well, the seismic network we have is much improved over what was available to scientists in Dave Hill's day back in the 80s. In fact, I would say that within the volcanic community or community of volcano observatories across the globe, the network that we have in the Long Valley area, the Mammoth Lakes area, is the most sophisticated and dense that exists. We have many more seismometers. The types of seismometers that we have in that area are highly sophisticated and can listen in and hear earthquakes of types that we didn't have an ear to the ground on back in the 80s, much more sensitive and much more useful for forecasting unrest at that volcanic center. We've also got an incredible increase in our ability to measure ground deformation because, you know, really it's the ground deformation, the earthquake activity, and the release of volcanic gases that herald the approach of an impending volcanic eruption. So our ability to detect changes above the background levels of seismicity and ground deformation and gas emanations in the Long Valley area is much improved and one of the best in the world.
And speaking of that, I read that the likelihood of a volcanic eruption at a place like Shasta or Lassen or Long Valley is about the same as a magnitude 8 earthquake on the San Andreas Fault. Is that about right?
That is close. I think the odds, based on the research and the recurrence intervals of these volcanic centers that I talked about, these 8 volcanic centers, the odds of the annual odds of renewed volcanism in the state is on the order of 1 in a few hundred to 1 in a few thousand, as I said, annually. Another way to think about that is, and this is a little bit more in the front of people's minds is to compare it to the earthquake forecasts that we've seen produced by the California Geological Survey and the U.S. Geological Survey. And, you know, the probability of another eruption occurring in California in the next 30 years, that 30-year forecast that the earthquake scientists talk about, is on the order of about 26%. Now, if you compare that to, say, the San Andreas Fault in the Bay Area, the probability of a 6.7 magnitude or greater earthquake happening in the next 30 years is a little bit lower. It's a 22% probability. And if you go down to the L.A. Basin area or Los Angeles region, the probability on a 30-year cycle is on the order of about 19%. And so that is why when we talk to the public and we talk to stakeholders, we say that the probability of an eruption occurring within the state of California is similar to that of a large San Andreas Fault earthquake in San Francisco or L.A.
Well, we're about out of time, but I would like to ask you one question. Is what's the big takeaway that you want us to take from your message about this, about your papers about communicating your science to the public and that give and take? What's the big message you want to get across to us?
I think the big message, and this is one that I keep beating the drum about, is that California is well known for its earthquake, landslide, flood hazards, but far less recognition of the volcanic hazards, the very real volcanic hazards that exist in this state. So California is not only earthquake country, it is also volcano country. Both of these hazards and natural phenomenon produce worries for the state, but at the same time, it leads to some of the most dramatic, wonderful landscapes anywhere in the nation and in the world. And so, in my mind, you take the good with the bad. You just be cognizant of hazards and mitigate as best you can.
Well, I love living in a state that has all this geologic drama to it.
Yeah. I do, too.
Dr. Margaret Mangan, thank you.
Thank you for your interest. Have a good day.
Thanks again to our guests, David Hill, Scientist Emeritus, and Margaret Mangan, Director of the California Volcano Observatory. They joined us from the offices of the United States Geological Survey in Menlo Park. Blue Dot is a production of North State Public Radio. Check out this and past podcasts at mynspr.org, iTunes, or wherever you get your podcast groove on. Our communications coordinator is Casey Gardner. Connect with us at NSPR News or me at Dave Shlom. Our engineer and co-producer is the man on the board, Nolan Ford. Casey, Nolan, and I remind you that from deep space, we all live on a pale blue dot.